You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com.
Please don't axe murder me and dump my body somewhere.
Other players just aren't intelligent enough to leverage a Johnny Vengeance.
Yes, that's awesome!
I wish they could control the release valve on spoilers a little bit more.
It's about the skill level of the pilot, and I think that's where Modern separates itself from Standard at this point.
The best minds in Magic are still working on that.
And it was just a giant Magic Nerd Fest all day on Memorial Day.
And I was a little nervous about ordering it, but you know, hey, we get to drinking beers on the show.
The answer for first pick in a powered cube is always upheaval. It's episode 54 of TryHards. We never thought we'd get this far. Honestly, we never thought we'd make it to 10, but here we are. Thank you for your indulgence, your patience, and most of all, your ears each week. I'm Sean Seacrest, he's Matt Hurley, and he's Brian Tibbetts. No, this isn't a belated birthday present to Maru, although Maru, we didn't get you anything else, so here you go. We get it started with this way each week here on the cast with What Are You Drinking? And he's still the reigning game day champ, so we'll start with him. Brian, what are you drinking tonight?
I'm drinking the best beer in the world, guys. Free beer. Did a favor for a friend of mine, which I didn't even think it was a favor. It was more like a, hey, can you come down and help me with something? And he's not a big ladder climber, so I hung like a rope. He was putting a tire swing up for his kids. I mean, it took me all of 15 minutes, and so I got a six-pack of Shiner Bock as payment, which his lovely wife ran down to me yesterday on Memorial Day, and I said, ooh, I know what I'm drinking on the show. So to Tom, thank you for my six-pack of Shiner Bock, and I will do my best to enjoy them during the show tonight.
From Texas to Louisville, Matt, what are you drinking?
A nice bourbon. A couple months ago, they got a special reserve bourbon in called Blanton's that's kind of hard to find, and it comes in a 175 bottle. So it's like a small, about the size of a softball. It's really, really good, and normally it's quite expensive, and she was able to get one at a good deal, so I'm drinking a fine bourbon tonight.
Make sure you don't break the horse off the top of the decanter stopper there.
Oh, so you know exactly which one it is.
I am familiar with Blanton's. It is very delicious. From Louisville, the home of the Derby, we'll go back out to Cali. I'm back with the Firestone Walker brew tonight. This is the Pivo. It's their hoppy pills. It's pretty hoppy, but yet it's pretty light. So pretty good. Got up above 80 here where I'm at today. Not too much humidity, which is kind of like a vacation from the weather in and of itself when you're in flyover country. But the Pivo, the hoppy pills from Firestone Walker here this evening for me. That's what we're drinking. We hope you've got something delicious as well as we unfurl this episode of TryHards. Hurley, you were really the guy who played the most Magic this week. Brian didn't get an opportunity to play. Some people say he retired following his game day victory. Others say that's just a legend. I want to tell a little bit of a different story when it comes to my turn. So what Magic did you play this week? Because you said you got to play quite a bit.
We have two floating holidays in my local branch down here, and they said, okay, we're going to take a half day on Friday. So really, we got a 3.5-day weekend. In my boss's words, he said, this is actually an afternoon off, guys. So please don't work unless it's an emergency. We decided to go over to the garden, the local community garden, and do some weeding on our garden and do some planting. 7 hours later, after being in the sun for both of us, I didn't feel like going to F&M. So I didn't play F&M Friday nights. Saturday morning, found out about a PPTQ. Shot out a message to say, hey, does anyone want to go to this PPTQ? That's about 45 minutes away. A guy I had never met before. He's like, hey, I know we never met, but I'll go if you don't mind giving me a ride. I'm like, sure, why not? And I made the joke about, please don't axe murder me and dump my body somewhere. And everyone's like, no, this guy's cool. So we ended up going down there. It was a sealed event. We had a great time. Both of our pools were hot garbage, like just light these pools on fire, hot garbage. I ended up going with a red-white aggro deck because that was the only color combinations I could find that I had more than 15 playables in. Decided to go red-white, and I'm like, maybe I can just go with like a 15-land red-white deck and just go hyper aggro. My deck decided to just take a giant dump on my face. 8 games I played, I think I mulliganed 5 or 6 of them. A couple times I mulliganed down to 4, which there was one time I mulliganed down to four and still won because I was attacking for like 16 or something ridiculous on turn four. But overall, I didn't have a good pool. He didn't have a good pool. So we ended up scrubbing out of that. Monday, one of the local guys has a powered cube. We decided to barbecue, drink some, drink some beer. We ended up having 10 people for a powered cube, and it was an absolute blast. We went over there. Some guys were drafting on Magic Online, and it was just a giant Magic nerd fest all day on Memorial Day. Got to actually play on Magic Online, and I found that the Vizier of Remedies deck with Devoted Druid and Modern, I played about 5 leagues with it, is really good. I'm thoroughly enjoying that. I'm actually going to continue to play it. I found a red version of it that has a red splash that's running Nahiri for the red, and then there's another card in the sideboard that it's running for the red, but it's nothing too crazy. But I really like the Nahiri because instead of using Walking Ballista, having that as your major win con, you can actually use Nahiri, put the Emrakul in there, and then it's running, you know, the Court of Call-In, so you can actually Court for Emrakul if you want to. Or there's a whole variety of different plays you can make that actually help, with the infinite mana. General Matt Hurley Theory, there was one guy who I played against who was super salty because I was playing against Burn. He said, "How come you didn't attack into my open mana?" I said, "Because you have Deflecting Palm in your hand." And he goes, "You're ghosting me." I'm like, are you streaming? This was actually the conversation we had. "Are you streaming?" He goes, "No." I'm like, "Then apparently I snuck into your house and I'm watching you while you're playing right now over your shoulder." That was a lot of fun. But overall, I got to play tons of Magic. It was a good 3.5-day weekend.
Seems like Matt's going to have plenty of input when we start breaking down the modern tournaments from this weekend, coming up in just a bit here on Tryhards. My different Magic experience, and I know, Matt, you're at some of the same mental space that I think I've landed in, so I'll really be interested to hear from Brian about this, because this is a little bit of a change for me. It's come over me lately, and I've kind of been on this train without acknowledging it for the last couple of years, simply saying that if I haven't played a card in the last 5 years, do I really need it? And it was on that train that I found myself thinking, you know what, I no longer really have the desire to quote-unquote own everything, to just have a set of Savannas in case one day I might want to play a Legacy deck that would require 4 Savannas. And no, I'm probably not going to play Maverick, so what else would you play that requires 4 Savannas? The best minds in Magic are still working on that. So I got a hold of Zemet. He is well known in not only podcasting circles as one of the foundational members of the Cartel Aristocrats, but also is a guy who is buying and selling Legacy and high-end Magic. He does, you know, work with Modern and Standard staples and things like that as well, but really known throughout the higher-end community as well, the Eternal Format community. He being a St. Louis, Columbia guy, me being a St. Louis and I worked in Columbia for years guy, we were able to get together and set up a meet date, and I chopped out some of my collection. Again, I don't need 4 Savannas. I just don't feel the need to hold on to that anymore. And I was able to move some of my extra stuff to him, and we had a great time. We met down at a place called International Tap House out in Chesterfield, bought him a beer for making the trip, and turns out he's a big beer nerd like we are as well. So we had a lot of fun talking about beer and drinking while we were doing that. Brian, have you gotten to that point, or do you still kind of have the collector bug? I mean, I still have Legacy Pox. I still have Legacy Reanimator. I still have, you know, the things that I want to kind of play around with in Standard. But realizing that I don't necessarily need everything, and part of it, I acknowledge, is because I'm blessed to have not only you guys, but several other contacts, that if I just decided one weekend, hey, instead of Reanimator, I want to play Sneak and Show, and I need to borrow these 15 cards, I can pretty well do that. Is it something that you find interesting in the game to try and be a collector versus being a player? Because that part of me that wants to collect, sure, I still want to bling out my Reanimator deck and pick up a couple of Guru Islands to go with my Guru Swamps in there, but I just don't feel like I need to have everything all the time anymore.
It's funny that you say that, because I've been working on this, I don't know if it's a project you want to call it, the last couple years, and I've actually started making some headway in the last couple months here, which is trying to really organize my collection in a very specific way, which is alphabetical by color. And that's a huge undertaking, especially because when you have so many cards lying around and to think about, oh man, I've got to alphabetize all my reds, I got to alphabetize all the blue, all that kind of stuff. It's not just going to be a me job. This is going to be kind of the daughter's going to help out, the kids in the neighborhood who are looking to get into Magic are going to help out. And this is my kind of long roundabout way of saying I have too many cards, and I was actually looking forward to this project at one point in my life, and I'm not looking forward to this project anymore. I think I'm finally on the train of what are people paying for bulk right now, and that's kind of where I'm at right now. So, Sean, on a different scale, I don't think I'm ready to just kind of look at my higher-end stuff and get rid of it yet. I still kind of have that collector stuff, and, you know, I'm the guy who'll always trade a bag of nickels for a $20 bill. I'll get rid of all kinds of jank rares and foily stuff to get one or two cards, usually lands, that I want. I'm looking still for that kind of stuff, but just sheer volume I'm trying to shed. I couldn't be happier. As my summer gets kicked off starting today, I'm really looking forward to do that and to pare down. So I totally get what you're saying. And because I know that, like you said, I can call on different people to get cards loaned because I've loaned out and, you know, hey, it's a two-way street, and to borrow things when you need to. So, no, I don't feel like I have to hold on to everything, but I think I'm still in the collector's vein a little bit more than you are.
That was our Week in Magic this week. We hope you had a great week in the best game ever invented. We have to do a little bit of a Patreon update right now. We have to start with a mea culpa. I have to be honest, guys. We wanted to do something a little different and what we thought would be special at the end of the month of May for our top-level Patreon Google Hangout. And we had the best of intentions of doing so, and we lined it out. If you heard the pre- and post-show before episode 52, 53, we were lining that out, making plans. And then episode 53 last week went up late on MTGcast. I know they do the best they can, but we really felt like there wasn't enough time for you. So we're aware of that, and we are going to make that up to you. We're kicking around some plans to make that up to you. So we apologize if you didn't get that message in time to join Matt for what happened. I ended up working some extra hours because of the holiday weekend. Everybody's got to make some money here and there, and I took that opportunity. So just follow the cast, the pre- and post-show notes, and the Patreon page, and we will definitely, and when we settle on what we're going to do, Matt will blast it out on Twitter as well. So if you were looking forward to that and it didn't work out, we really do apologize. That brings us up to a note that we got, guys. Now, we don't read every note that we get here on the cast, but this was from our winner back in episode 51 of The Drawing. He picked up the Relentless Dead. It's from Jarrett Owen, and Jarrett loves the show from Brisbane, Australia. That's right, down under where the toilet flushes the other way. He says, firstly, let me start with, what are you drinking? My drink of choice is usually a gin and tonic or just about any ale. Our climate's a little bit more accommodating to any beverage choice. You know, we wish we had that opportunity. He says, I'd like to take the opportunity to say how much I enjoy the show. Thank you, Jarrett. It's truly a joy to listen to. The production quality is excellent, and the chemistry and banter are fantastic. You hit all the topics out of the park. Thank you very much. As a 40-plus-year-old, Jarrett says, a guy with real life to contend with, two small children, it's heartening to hear a voice from that perspective. Well, minus the two kids part on occasion. He says, I love hearing from Brian as to how he's indoctrinating his daughter into the game. I'd like to begin my brainwashing process with my children early. I'm not sure which would amuse me more, drafting with my kids on the kitchen table or the look of disdain from my wife. Anyway, I hope all is well with you guys. Looking forward to maybe one day meeting you in person. He then asked if we would take the time to sign the card. He wants to add it to his cube of special items. I texted him back, emailed him back, I should say, and said, Matt would disagree that having us sign it improves the value. And he said, well, tell Matt, sometimes the dollar value isn't everything in life. So, Jarrett, thank you very much for the note. Brian, you're the expert here that he wants to hear from. How did you go about starting to indoctrinate Clara?
You know, indoctrination, I think, is a little bit of a harsh term, and I absolutely love that he used it also because it's kind of true. It's when you really want somebody to do something because you want somebody to like something as much as you like it. The worst possible way to do that is to just come over the top and actually show how much you love something, because that usually turns people off. So I just kind of let her come to the game on her own. she went through kind of a very, very interested phase and then lost a little bit, and she didn't take that real well and didn't show a whole lot of interest. And then, you know, we would go to the shop and get some more cards, and she's like, oh, this would go well in that white deck I have. And I said, yes, which, and she was talking about the intro decks and things. And so I just kind of kept it at arm's length and, you know, would always offer, hey, if you want to play a game, well, maybe later, maybe later. And sometimes she would, sometimes she wouldn't. She's gotten really, really interested again. And I think it's mostly because the neighborhood kids that I mentioned earlier are interested as well. And so she's like, Dad, don't you think that we should have like this, we could just have like a magic couple hours every day in the summer. And of course my heart rate is increasing tenfold as soon as she said that. And I'm like, that sounds good. You know, something like that. Where I'm like, yes, that sounds awesome. And it's going to depend on your kid's age, of course, Jared, but I would always say that they've got to come to it on their own. Never force it. It's a game. You want it to be fun. They may like it more than you do. They may like it a little less than you do. But as long as you're having fun, as long as it's never a burden or something that they feel pressured doing, I think that's absolutely the right way to go about it. I'll always push a little bit more, maybe just to kind of see if it's just general kid laziness and, you know, is this something that we could do together? Or if they're really not interested, then I'm not going to say much.
Yeah, this is the same thing my buddy Sean in St. Louis is going through with his little guy, trying to get him into D&D. So we've been kind of emailing back and forth along that way, and he would echo that, I think. He lets him come to him and ask questions and things like that, rather than forcing it on him. That way they kind of learn at their own pace, and it's interesting. It feels like fun instead of work. So, Jarrett, thank you very much for the email. You want to email us? Well, the contacts all in the show notes. That brings us up to this week's tournament action. Two GPs, guys, both in Modern. Copenhagen had 1,815. Kobe had 2,802. In Copenhagen, Matt Arizzi 2-0'd Kristen Ortiz Roos, Death's Shadow over Living End. And in Kobe, it was Joe So 2-0 over Teramasa Kojima. Black White Eldrazi took down Dredge in that one. Now, the reason I grouped them together rather than going through each one individually is because both kind of had me thinking about this. And Matt, I'll start with you because I think your background on Magic Online may give us a different answer. And that is simply this. As well as the tournaments were played, it is interesting and varied as many of the deck choices are in Modern. How much weight do you put on foreign metagames?
When we were cube drafting yesterday, we were laughing at some of the lists that we saw. Like, somebody made the joke, and this is when you know you're a true nerd get-together. Somebody made the joke, said, why don't I just throw Collected Company in my affinity deck? You know, I think that especially Japanese players, they're more willing to innovate, and they recognize that, okay, if this doesn't work out, we'll just change it. Sometimes, you know, it's like, screw it, I'm going to try these out. I don't care. And some of their player quality is so high in some of these tournaments overseas that it doesn't matter. You could give them a ham sandwich and they'll still do well at a GP. So I like seeing it because a lot of times if there's new tech, it starts, really the seeds are planted at these foreign tournaments. And then it seems like some of the American pros will tend to refine it a little bit or start to take the metagame in a different direction that that's heading towards. So I mean, I always look at those tournaments and I'm like, okay, there's usually some type of basis for why they're doing this. It's not just a random, I lost a bet with a buddy, so I have to play Shadow of Doubt.
Ice cold, yeah. Dude. Ice cold.
That was pretty cold right there.
No, straight I mean, I always look at it as like a great basis for just kind of innovating in these older formats.
Brian, Kojima with Dredge and Roos with Living End were half a world apart, but I think they proved that you can still attack Modern from almost any angle you want as long as you're good at wielding that weapon. I was most impressed over the weekend by Grixis Shadow, mostly in the hands of Brad Nelson, because the SCG Open was also Modern, and we'll get to it in a bit, but it was just what I got to watch the most, though, because of my schedule. Where are you at with the metagame right now, and what has impressed you? Because Grixis Shadow and Black White Eldrazi are much more, I would say, part of the mainstream conversation than Living End and Dredge, even though both are known commodities.
This has been my refrain for the last 6 months, is that Modern is a very, very healthy format. as much as Hurley has disagreed with that, and he finds a deck and plays it once and said that deck's crap, and I get that. There's so much out there that you can win with, and I think that's what makes Modern so fun. From all of the different iterations of the company decks, now the Counters company is very, very popular, to the different flavors of Eldrazi. I'm on Eldrazi Tron right now as kind of like the tier one deck that I would run in a tournament tomorrow if I was going that route. I still love my Mardu Tokens deck, obviously, as kind of a special place in my heart to go to. But if you look up and down the list, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody came up with some kind of crazy brew in the next 2 to 3 months, and it's like, yeah, we're going to attack the metagame this way now. Because if you look up and down, it's not about this deck is absolutely at the top. It's about the skill level of the pilot, and I think that's where Modern separates itself from Standard at this point.
Wizards has admitted that Collected Company was a mistake. The Counters Company deck is the deck in Modern that I am worried is going to become ubiquitous, almost Crazy Cat Lady level in Standard, because of its ability to be varied, because of its ability to play at instant speed, because of its ability to seamlessly play infinite combos inside that shell. Even though it didn't take down either of the GPs this weekend, you're a Modern guy. Do you think Counters Company is sort of the boogeyman in the room, and am I just being overly worried about it getting out of control?
No. You're not overly worried at all. When I look at a Counters Company deck, or when you sit down to play anybody who's running Birds of Paradise or any, you know, Noble Hierarch and stuff, all of a sudden you just start sweating because you're like, oh my God, what are they going to company into? And when a company hits and suddenly it's like, you know, infinite life, infinite mana, when the game ends on the spot, that is frustrating. That's very, very frustrating. So I know that there's ways around those, but it's very, very hard to interact with those decks on the axis that you really want to, because not all decks can just kind of ping their mana dorks and things. I tell you what, the is it Static Acer? That is going to be showing up in a lot of different sideboards for those decks running those colors. If you can't deal with their small mana rampers, you're going to lose that matchup more often than not, I think. So, yeah, I definitely think that's a boogeyman right now in the room. I think that Company is just a dumb, broken card. But Modern is healthy enough to overcome it, as we've seen. Like you said, it didn't take down either of the tournaments. It's not like it's running rampant throughout. But I definitely think that we need to keep our eyes on that deck, just because the infinite combos and how many of them there are now can really make the gameplay pretty stale pretty quickly.
Oh, what a difference design under the New World Order makes. Who would have imagined 5 or 8 years ago we'd be talking about green as the most broken color in Modern? Congratulations to Wizards. You were able to upset that apple cart. This weekend's tournaments will take us to Omaha, Amsterdam, and Manila, all for Standard GPs. Matt, is this just bad timing? Because the next banned and restricted announcement isn't until June 14th. So are we participating in a dead format this weekend? I know that I've already started working on my post-Marvel Standard deck.
I don't know. I was just looking, and the PPTQs are Standard. And honestly, even though it's in my backyard, I'm like, do I really want to play in a PPTQ with this format? I mean, that question is going through my head. So if I'm questioning that, being me, I have to wonder how many people are they losing out on. You know, at these, they can barely break, at my local shop, they can barely break 8 for the Saturday Standard tournaments. I'm worried that if they ban, or if they wait till Ulamog goes away, it could be bad, because you can just put in a broken nickel bolus. I'm worried that if they ban the actual deck, or, you know, ban the Marvel, you know, what happens to consumer confidence? I mean, they're stuck between a rock and a hard place, and I don't know. I don't know what they should do here. I'm at a loss.
The next banned and restricted announcement comes up on June 14th. Wizards has acknowledged, I believe, through Sam Stoddard on the mothership, that they did not account for Eldrazi still being in the format when they created Aetherworks Marvel because of the then-planned rotation schedule that they then rolled back. Brian, do you think we need to ban Marvel? I certainly do. As I said, I'm working on a bad deck, I'll admit, for post-Marvel Standard coming up in the next couple of weeks.
No, I don't think we need to ban Marvel right now. I really don't. What I'm looking at is, I know it's a huge portion of the metagame, but I still think, and I've said this before, there's enough decks out there that can keep Marvel in check. And I think we're at that point where people just have to think a little bit harder. We have to brew a little bit more streamlined. And there's a lot of powerful standard decks out there, as Grand Prix showed us a couple weeks ago. You know, you've got the green-black energy decks. You've got the blue-red decks. You've got the Simic ramp decks, which I think are making a little bit of a comeback to try to get ahead of the Marvel decks in a way. So, no, I'm not ready to do that yet. I'm still thinking that we're in an okay spot. I hope that that holds. And I could definitely see where we may have to make a banning of Marvel, but I think you said it right there. Is consumer confidence going to take a hit? And is that going to be worse than just kind of suffering through the fall with it in the metagame?
Oh, I can't wait to put an overpowered Nicol Bolas into play off my Marvel coming up in just a little bit.
I made the joke this weekend that I said, I don't care if Nicol Bolas is Grixis colors and 15 colorless, and his plus two is discard your hand, full stop. I'm still playing it.
That is just cruel of you. I mean, finally Wizards made a two mana planeswalker, and now all you're going to do, because he's red, is bang on him the whole time and use him as the yardstick of badness, Matt. I mean, it's just so mean of you. I can't even believe it. SCG took their tour on a GP Modern weekend to Baltimore and played Modern. 903 showed up to watch Brad Nelson on Grixis Shadow take down Ben 40-card Freeman on Dredge 2-0. This was a stock top eight, guys. Todd Stevens, Ryan Hovis, Reed Duke on Old School Jund. Of course, he was the guy I was rooting for. Didn't quite get it done, though. One thing that SCG Tours had in common with the two GPs was that the top 32 featured a virtual potpourri, a cornucopia, a plethora. Guys, that means a lot, by the way, of different deck archetypes. So, Brian, I'll let you lead. I know you went into it just a little bit before, but macro view of Modern. With so many archetypes being viable, it seems like this should be fun to play. I love watching it. Why do I hate playing it?
I don't know why people hate playing Modern. I think it's actually really, really cool. This is my theory as to why people hate playing Modern, those of you who do, is that you don't know what you're going to be sitting down across from on the table. And it's hard to kind of pinpoint somebody's, you know, deck right away, like you can with Legacy in the first two or three turns, like you can in Standard, maybe in the first three to four turns. With Modern, it might take you a little bit of time to figure out exactly what's going on. And also, you know, how often can we say, if you're not a top-level player, have you played against Dredge? Have you played against Living End? Have you played against the Blue-Red Storm deck? Have you played against Amulet Titan? Have you played against Lantern Control? There's so many different archetypes out there. You would not expect somebody to have tested against all of those decks unless they're a weekly grinder. And so that can be daunting, because you're like, okay, how do I even do this? What am I supposed to how am I supposed to play my cards against these cards? Because this is doing some really broken stuff. So I think that's my theory on why people don't like playing Modern, where I see that as just a big bonus, because it's a much different challenge than saying, oh, that person's playing a Delver deck. I know how to play a Delver deck. I'm just going to try to outplay this guy. It's a different thing. Do you guys agree with that?
Brian, I think you're exactly on point. That's why I love watching it, because I never know what's coming up. But I hate playing it that way, Matt, because I never know what's coming up. In addition to all the decks Brian listed, we have to have every flavor of Death's Shadow. And oh yeah, at the same time, be prepared for Kart Clan Ironworks. Your turn, Matt. Go ahead and go to the sideboard.
No, that's exactly the reason why. I mean, it's just, there's no card, I guess, that is like, okay, you know, this is something that is just fantastic to have in your sideboard. It's got a lot of, I guess, scalpels, and it doesn't have any claymores chopping through the entire metagame, I guess. Feels like there's not enough cards in your sideboard, and it just becomes a sideboard game. At least that's the way I view it, because I enjoy the diversity. But if there was five or six decks you're playing against, so you could learn those matchups, so you could learn, you know, what's in those decks, and you could properly prepare your sideboard, I think that's why I enjoyed Legacy so much more.
Matt, scalpel, claymore. I think this is all just penis imagery you're bringing up. So
maybe it is.
Not exactly sure where you're going right there. All right. The next big test for Modern will be part of the GP Vegas weekend. We'll watch and see if that has any effect on the format. That brings us up to the news this week. Guys, I'm about to get a little peanut butter in your chocolate right now. Let me know if it tastes good to you. Wizards created Mega Waves this last week with a special Pro Tour invite. We've seen these before. This time it's Amaz, who is a mega Hearthstone streamer who has been streaming more Magic lately. According to reports, Amaz is a more than competent Magic player. Brian, are you okay with Wizards using these special invites, not taking a seat away from someone who's earned it, but instead extending the field by one and using a special invite in order to quote-unquote promote the game? We've seen this before in the past. Sean Plott, Day 9, people know him as, was one of the high-profile ones that they did this with, and he went on to do a series called Spellslingers for Felicia Day's Geek & Sundry channel. It should be interesting to see what Wizards expects by inviting Amaz onto the Pro Tour and what sort of payoff they get by having Amaz there.
Yeah, I think this is a great idea. Anything you can do to advance the game to give it some more visibility is great. And you're not taking, like you said, John, a chair away from someone else. I think that's definitely in the best interest of the long-term health of the game. And yeah, what's the problem with that? I think that that's something that Wizards probably needs to look at doing more. And so I applaud them for this. I think this is fine.
Matt, you on the same page with Brian?
Absolutely. Anybody who's bitching about this saying, oh, it takes them away. No, if there's a finite amount of seats at the Pro Tour, which, you know, technically I guess there is because there's only so many people that can get to certain levels to get those Pro Tour invites unless you get to a certain Pro Tour or Pro Point level. If they were saying, okay, look, we're going to kick X person off the Pro Tour to invite this person, that'd be one thing. This is them expanding out their audience. I'm going to take it even a step farther, and I'm partially stealing this from Leaving a Legacy. I listened to that today in the car. Why they wouldn't pay him for immediately after that was announced to play nothing but Magic Online and say, hey, here's unlimited amount of Magic Online, and here's 10 grand to play Magic Online for 2 weeks. That gets people say, oh my gosh, this guy actually knows what he's doing. Plus, it gives him more practice. He's not a newbie to the game, but you throw any of us who's not a newbie, quote unquote newbie to the game, into the Pro Tour, and we're probably going to sink, you know, like a rock. It gets all of his streamers to actually say, oh, I want to watch him. And then, you know, he just every day he plugs Magic Online, and then when he's playing on the Pro Tour, some of those people come over to Twitch and watch. As crappy as Magic Online is, on his link, you have to have a link to say, do you enjoy watching Magic? Well, here's a link to Magic Online so you can play it yourself. And I don't think they're taking it to that point, and they need to, because otherwise these free invites, you're wasting a little bit of time.
Yeah, you're talking about the total overall promotion of the game, and I would agree Wizards does need to push that name out there a little bit further. The one thing I would say is that Magic players, especially enfranchised players who chase the Pro Tour, we forget Pro as a short doesn't mean professional for the Pro Tour. It means promotional. It's the promotional Magic the Gathering Tour, so they're using it to promote the game, not as an outlet for necessarily professional players. You can style yourself or be a professional who plays Magic, but that's not a tour for you. It is the promotional vehicle for Wizards when it comes to the tour. So don't forget, Wizards has a very different definition of the Pro Tour than many players do. Matt, there was a big announcement this week, the Commander Anthology decklist announcement. Wizards announced they're putting out a best of Commander complete decklists from over the history of their Commander deck releases. I'm a little bit worried because either I think like Wizards or they think like me, because I bought a deck from each of these releases, and these are the four decks that I bought along the way. Wizards announced that Kalia the Vast is going to be in there, Derivi the Tactician, Freelise, and Marin. Those are the four that are going to be in there. So you've got Dagah, red, black, white for Kalia. You've got Bant, green, white, blue for Derivi, mono green in Friolese, and then green, black in Marin. What do you expect this to do financially? Is this just a fun outlet to see a little bit of the evolution and history of the commander lists that Wizards has published? Or is this going to be something like the anthology Plane Chase that is just a hyper-specialized audience and sits on a shelf because the MSRP is overpriced?
So I think this is actually one of the most important releases of this year. First off, it doesn't come with any oversized cards. They're very, very bad, and you can hear it in my voice. They're very bad about communicating information. People had questions, so they shot information out on Twitter. And, it says on here, each deck comes packed with a foil commander card and all the tokens you'll be needing. What they don't mention is those aren't oversized commander cards. Those are normal playable foil cards that are going to be foiled. That's very important because some of these haven't had foils before. I don't think Teriel, Reckoner of Souls has. Derevi, I think, has a Judge promo. There's a lot of those. Freylist does not have a foil. Marin of Clan Neltooth, which is a very, very popular deck, does not have a foil as far as I know. I do hope that these sleeves are better than what's in Commander's Arsenal, but this does come with four life counters that are similar to what came in the Commander's Arsenal. Those are very popular, and those sell for, I think, $20 a piece now. But I think this is awesome. The MSRP on this, I believe, is $164.99. You're paying retail on these, plus you're paying, let's figure $30, so you're paying an extra $40 for the sleeves and the life counters plus all the additional foils. If that's the proper MSRP, I'm not sure if they actually announced it, but if that's the proper MSRP, the $165 is not a terrible price. I mean, maybe sub $150 would be great. If I build up some store credit, I'm going to save it up for this.
One of the hyper-specialized releases that we saw was Commander's Arsenal. There hasn't been anything quite like that since. Is this sort of the next generation of that, or are we going to expect something like that Commander's Arsenal again, Matt?
I think this is the next generation. I kind of mentioned, that it comes with those same life counters, and those sleeves I hope are higher quality. I mean, I still have those Commander's Arsenal sleeves, but they were just stickered back, and they didn't last very long at all.
I loved them. They were gorgeous, and they were just stickered back, and I peeled through them. That was back when I played more Commander than I do now. Nowadays, they'd probably last me for 10 years, because that's how often I get a chance to play Commander. I don't think the only way I could be more excited is if, well, I've never actually looked at a leak, so Wizards won't come after us here on Tryhards, but unofficial spoilers, guys, would you be waiting to add one to one of these decks? There were some card images, leaked by Turn 1 Thoughtseize, another cast on MTGcast. Where do you stand on stolen material, i.e. unofficial leaks? This is something that Wizards has gotten very, and I believe them on why they would do it, upset about in the past, and they have thrown the book at some people who, released their God book when they shouldn't have. This is something that, as a father who is an artist, I am always adamantly against. If you release this when it shouldn't be released, this is stealing. This is intellectual property that is not yours. But yet, somehow in the Magic community, this is viewed as a service to the community in some parts of our community, getting information that wasn't necessarily ready for release and releasing it early. Matt, this often has financial ramifications, but just as often, it turns out these images are fakes and really hurts the community from that angle. What do you think about what's been going around? I know you've taken a look at some of this information and or misinformation. We don't yet know what it is.
So first, I have to say, there is a podcast out there called Turn 1 Thoughtseize. They've came out, if you haven't seen the spoilers, it says at Turn and the number 1 Thoughtseize. They've came out and said, this is not us. This is somebody else using it, because theirs is actually Turn O-N-E Thoughtseize. So it's Turn and 1 spelled out. If you know of Turn 1 Thoughtseize, this is not them. They've been blasting on Twitter all weekend. Hey, we didn't do this. We didn't do this. We have nothing to do with this. Other than that, it destroys the surprise. If I was going to Hascon, and this, I'm going to make an ancillary comment here. If I was going to Hascon to draft Iconic Masters, they're doing unique where they said there's going to be zero spoilers. You don't know what's in there. So essentially that first day, people are going to be opening up packs and they're going to say, what do I build? And it's going to be like, you know, we were playing 15, 20 years ago before spoilers were there. Think about how upset you would be if you were going to HasCon to play Iconic Masters for the first time in that first day, and then all of a sudden all these spoilers came out. I wish they could control the release valve on spoilers a little bit more, and I wish that there was more of a surprise in a lot of these sets. These are the commander decks, so the only ramifications here are going to be that, you know, cards are going to spike early, and I'm going to talk about that later in the show, but cards are going to spike early where they shouldn't have spiked already. You know, it just kind of destroys the fun of saying, oh, what's going to be the, you know, the tribal decks? Well, now we know that one's a dragon. These do look real. I would say that they are real. I hope they find who's leaking these, and I hope they take care of it.
But what's the difference between this and just normal spoilers leading up to the pre-release? I mean, we have to think about this. We don't even have release weekend anymore. We have pre-release weekend, which people get so hyped up for, I would say even more so than release weekend. Isn't that kind of built into Magic's, you know?
No, there's a difference there. And the spoilers are controlled by Wizards. These are leaks that aren't controlled by Wizards, right, Matt?
No, that's true. That's true. But do you think the culture is there, I guess?
I mean, I think the spoiler culture is there. Let's use this example then. The leaks, let's say that for some reason Wizards said, hey, here's the Ur-Dragon. We're going to let Tryhards reveal it.
Yes.
And then, I know, I agree. But actually, I would probably prefer to have Rambo's Dragon Engine. But regardless, whichever card it is.
Yeah, that's the other cast that Matt does, Jank Cast. So,
Jank Cast, for sure.
Look forward to that.
But let's say they did that, and then all of a sudden, 3 weeks before we were to announce this spoiler card, it was spoiled on the internet. I mean, how would that make us feel? So there is a plan with the spoilers, and they do a pretty good job of building hype, although sometimes I question why they release some of the most powerful cards in the beginning and, you know, let it trail off so badly at the end. They did a little bit better job with Amonkhet. I can see, you know, it disrupts their plans, and it disrupts their support of the community and their marketing tactics. So that's why it's bad. I mean, overall, like, that's why I, you know, seeing these months early, now you're just going to see the Dragon decks when I think they're released in July. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. They release August 25th. So now we see these Dragon decks. Now we're going to be like, ugh, guess what? We're getting Dragons in August. Whereas maybe they had, you know, 2 or 3 week spoiler season planned for the Commander anthologies to announce kind of what everything, or for the Commander decks to announce what everything is.
I'm with you. It does hurt more than it helps. Unfortunate that somebody out there wants to be the person who's going to share all the information. Maybe in a post Snowden world, this is what everybody thinks. All the information needs to be available to everybody all the time. And I'm definitely not of that ilk.
Well, the good thing about a post Snowden world is that information still seems to reign supreme. And the one man who always has the inside track on that, whether you're going up or down with him in the elevator, is our own Matt Hurley. Matt, what's in the elevator with you this week?
The card I want to talk about today is Haven of the Spirit Dragon, specifically foils. Unfortunately, with the Commander leaks, this card is in foils you can get for about $5 or so. Foils are disappearing fast on the internet. I would say pick these up because there's not many left out there. Even if there's a Haven of the Spirit Dragon in these Commander decks, because they are dragon-themed, they're going to be non-foil. Players are going to want those foils. If you see them for $5 or $6, pick them up because they're going to be $14, $15 cards.
Haven of the Spirit Dragon in the elevator this week. Brian, will that help me cast my Russian foil Ugin?
Hurley, that was totally fair play because of your comment earlier. So
that was payback.
Yeah, that was total payback.
You're right, it was. Payback. And now we continue with this very special episode of Tryhards. That brings us up to this week's 3 Minutes to Brew. Brian has promised something that in the pre-show he said would make Sean's night. All right, I hope you don't disappoint. I'm going to open up another one of the Firestone Peebos and get ready for the greatest thing to happen to me tonight.
Okay, that's a lot to live up to, and I'm sorry that this is the epitome, this is the pinnacle of your evening. However, I was very, very happy to see that there were some control decks that popping up on the modern metagame scene. And Sean, I don't know if you saw it or not, but first place at StarCityGames.com Classic this past weekend was a Jeskai control list running one of your favorite cards of all time, a Johnny Vengeant. So, gentlemen, a Johnny Vengeant, can it make a comeback in modern, or is the old Lion Boy just too slow for modern? Sean, this is your baby. This is your card. What do you think? Is this got a place in the modern metagame moving forward, or is it just too slow? 3 minutes.
I'm going to tell you right now, I own a foil, a Japanese foil, a Russian foil, a regular Russian, and a Johnny versus Nicol Bolas deck foil. This is my guy when it comes to Planeswalkers. I love a Johnny Vengeant, and it pains me to say that other players just aren't intelligent enough to leverage a Johnny Vengeant in the format. Of course it's in a Johnny Vengeant world. I brew with him in Legacy, albeit badly, often enough to know that if you build a deck around him, there are very few more powerful 4-drop or 3-drop Planeswalkers that you can get. Yes, when we did our Planeswalker review episode, Jace the Mind Sculptor rated higher. I will even appease Matt and say that a build around me, Tezzeret, is going to be more powerful than a Johnny Vengeant. But in my mind, he's surpassed original Elspeth. He's surpassed Liliana of the Veil because he can proactively win the game on his own. Liliana of the Veil can keep you from losing, but a Johnny can actually win the game for you. So I think that while that version of Jeskai was really a counter-burn version, and I looked at it extensively, I think it makes good use of a Johnny by surprising you with him in that. When I run my modern Jeskai list, I use one of Johnny Vengeant either out of the board or I'll rotate it in into the main deck, depending on how many Jace Architects of Thought I want, one or two at the time. That's the Nahiri Emrakul combo deck that I like. So I think that a Johnny Vengeant, ultra powerful, but is the modern format, in this case, we touched on it earlier, too wide for him? Because even I'll admit, he's not good against everything you can run up against.
That's fascinating. I'm glad you took that, Dak, because I think you're onto a lot of things there. Before I get to that, Hurley, what do you think? Is a Johnny Vengeant going to show up in more control lists or in modern overall?
You picked this card, and you picked this without any sort of coaching from either of us. I'll say this. But I mentioned earlier I was playing the green-white tokens list with Nahiri in them, and I actually played a couple of tournament practice games in the tournament practice room with one Nahiri and one a Johnny Vengeant in it, because the deck I was playing didn't have a lot of main deck removal. It wasn't playing many. I was playing like two Path of Exiles, and I'm like, man, what fits in there? And a Johnny Vengeant just naturally fits right in there. People are so greedy with their mana bases in modern, being able to keep their white source tapped down or their blue source, because I hate Stubborn Denial. Jesus, that card is annoying in Death Shadow. I actually played it and it did some decent work, because me being able to plop that down and potentially, you know, blow out whatever they were attacking me with. I do think it has places. I think it's going to be more in the like the mid-rangey decks that maybe have the mid-range combo style decks where you're not aiming to win right off the bat, but you want to kind of get into the mid-range and then win there. I definitely think he does have room, and I like I said, I actually am trying him out with the Nahiri in that green-white collected counters deck.
You both are spot on with everything you've said about a Johnny Vengeant right now. I love this deck that Jonathan Sukinik took to a first place finish at the Classic at the SCG this past weekend. It's interesting that it happened at the Classic and not in the Open, and I think that just is kind of a lean toward how fast modern can be, and those decks are going to, in the hands of the more skilled players perhaps, or the more practiced players. I don't want to take anything away from somebody taking first place. But a control deck, I think, running in a Johnny Vengeant, taking first place is really, really cool, especially with all of the backup of the burn and the counters going into this Jeskai control list. And not even having another one of my favorites that Sean already mentioned, Jace Architect of Thought, going along. There was one Planeswalker in this deck, and that was a Johnny Vengeant. I think that's really, really cool. Pretty ballsy for him to do that, and just leaning on the spells and then three Snapcasters to kind of get the job done. So I would not be surprised if a Johnny shows up to try to balance out the speed of some of these modern decks to, you know, maybe play the long game, because Sean's right. When Vengeant hits the board, it can win you the game very, very quickly. and not just stop you from losing. So I think a Johnny's got a spot, and I'm looking forward to more Planeswalkers in the modern metagame.
You did it, Brian. You made my night. A Johnny Vengeant on 3 Minutes to Brew this week on Tryhards. That brings us up to what we did to get better at Magic this week. Matt, you played the most Magic. What'd you do to get better?
Actually, when I was cube drafting, there was a hell of a group there. And I mean, by a hell of a group, I mean they were all very skilled. They all had very different views on the game. We were talking about, you know, the modern metagame, Legacy, all the different formats. And being able to pick those guys' brain, I really look forward to, I think I've kind of found a good group there, and I really look forward to hanging out with them more. They have such a different view from where I, you know, from where I came from in Quincy there, especially amongst both you guys, that it's very refreshing to hear different different views and different picks, how things come out there. And I think there was four or five guys there that had played on Pro Tour before, if not more. One of the things that did come out was one of the players needs a partner. There's a team sealed about 6 hours away, June 17th. He's like, hey, man, I'd love to have you as a sealed partner. So maybe I'll be going to a GP and actually playing in the main event and sealed. I don't know.
It'll be very interesting to see how you do. And by the way, the answer for first pick in a powered cube is always upheaval. Anything else is just wrong.
Here's the cards I didn't play in my sideboard. Fast Bond, Opposition, Upheaval, and...
Oh, you had the Upheaval deck and didn't play it.
That was the only three blue cards.
Well, that's
the only two blue cards and then Fast Bond. But I ended up with a like 9 mana dorks, a Mox Emerald, and a Tarka. I mean, I cast turn 3 or turn 4 a Tarka, like 4 games. And then a Mirror Battle Sphere, and then I also had Genesis Wave and Green Sun Zenith.
Oh,
so
man,
I needed one more big fatty in there to really do it, and I had Harmonize and another draw spell as well. So it was an interesting thing, and he's still missing a couple pieces of power. He has some of it proxied, but he just got his Lotus in there, and he's like, yeah, it doesn't leave my house. I'm like, all right, well, I'm more than happy coming over to your house on Sunday afternoons and draft that bad boy.
Yeah, that sounds like it would be an absolute ton of fun. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
Well, I don't know if it counts as getting better at Magic this week, but more appreciative of Magic this week, perhaps, is what I want to go with. I was just kind of lazily trolling Facebook, and I got a link on the top 10, somebody's random top 10 list, of the best altered cards in Magic. And so it's done by some of the best altered artists working today. And I could not take my eyes off of all of the different beautiful altered arts that were going on of this stuff. And it just continues to blow me away what people are doing to Magic cards to either enhance what the original artist has already started or to completely take it in a completely different direction, to take another pop culture take on the card, to do something very, very original. And I just started kind of scrolling around the net, looking at all the different kinds of alters that are coming out, from people's takes on dual lands to people's takes on tokens and people's takes on stuff. And somebody who loves just the artwork and Magic, and I think we all do, we can all appreciate that. This is something where I am happily ready to just kind of cash in my bulk commons and uncommons, and I would love to get a playset of some of the stuff that I've seen. So to everybody out there who does altered artwork on Magic cards, kudos to you. Keep pushing the edge of the envelope. I think it's phenomenal stuff. There's some really, really great things going on out there, and it just blows me away, A, because I could never do it myself, but B, you do have fans out there who will gladly pay top dollar because we know how hard you do work at it, and I hopefully will be laying down some cash for some real cool stuff very soon.
That's why I'm always trying to get our buddy Mouse, who does great work, and I have some of his stuff, back to his drawing board, so to speak, back to his paint and brush, because he does very good work, but he's been away from it a bit lately. Brian, by the way, before I let you go, Inquiring Minds want to know, in the post-show last week, you ordered a Guru Forest. Has it arrived at the house?
It did arrive at the house. Yes, it did. It was on the Star City. You know, they do the weekly sale, and all of their moderately played cards were like 20% off or something. So this was considered a moderately played Guru Forest, and I was a little nervous about ordering it, but you know, hey, we get to drinking beers on the show. I had a ton of store credit saved up, and I just said, we're doing it. We're just going to get some stuff, and I ordered a lot of pretty other lands, and I tell you what, it's got a tiny crease at the very top center, but other than that, it's in really, really great condition, and I don't feel bad even after not having a beer in my hand looking at it. I was happy with my purchase just because of how cheap I did get it with the percentage off, and I was using store credit. So yeah, so I'm only one Guru away from having my complete set. And so, yeah, I'm very, very happy with the Forest purchase.
All right, Brian getting his Guru land all lined out after last week's show. That brings it up to what I did to get better at Magic this week. I've mentioned this before with having my Padawan, Rachel, and her upswing in Magic. Not only interest, but her desire to do well in competitive events. I keep finding myself learning new things by trying to open her mind to other avenues on how to improve with Magic. And after her weekend outing of Modern at our LGS, where she didn't do very well with a borrowed Blue-Black Fairies deck, I found myself talking to her about why she didn't do well. I got to watch a couple of matches before I had to move on to my next thing to do, and it's a tough deck to play. It requires a lot of knowledge about the format and what your opponent's playing in order to play it optimally, and then there are a lot of decision trees to make in that deck, especially in a format like Modern, not even the old standard Fairies deck. So I got to thinking about how she could get a little bit better at Magic. And so what I thought about doing, and we're going to actually do this week, is I gathered up some of the best Pro Tour matches that you can find on the Wizards YouTube web channel, and we can watch them. We can look at the deck lists, and then we can talk about why decisions are made, and then see when those decisions are made. We're to the point now where we're talking about understanding your strategy, how to win, whether or not it's best to be defensive, whether or not it's best to be aggressive, essentially a more advanced version of who's the beatdown and kind of understanding your role. And Brian, you touched on it earlier in the show when you were talking about identifying other decks in Modern. How to identify what you're playing against in the first couple of turns? Because as our evolution of players took place, we know, especially in Legacy, going from having that, oh, I know what you're playing on turn two or three moment to that, oh, I know what you're playing on turn one by what fetch land you played, or I can narrow it down to these two or three decks, you can now make informed decisions throughout the rest of that match. So teaching someone else to try and have that next level consciousness about what's going on in the game and then integrate that into their decision-making matrix has really refreshed my own interest in doing that and making sure that, honestly, I'm brushed up on my decision-making matrix along the way. So getting her ready for that is what I did to get better at Magic this week. Hopefully you did something to get better at Magic this week, other than spend your time listening to tryhards. While that might appease your ears, probably not going to help you be a better Magic player, let's be honest. We appreciate you, your time, and your interest. And oh, you brave soul, we'll see you next week here on Tryhards.